Hello, this is Daryl War for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows Relief Series 4. Well, someday. We've relieved a bit of it, but the radio drama, intended radio drama, to relieve the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows characters with a whole lot of other characters from other shows and movies that took place around the same time to help us out. Because for some of us, you know, like everybody else, you can listen to some other show or watch the original. But for some of us, we didn't expect to care about the characters and cared about them too much, which makes sense because they were based on a lot of these storylines were based on classic novels. And they had a crackerjack writing team, more than one person, just like a lot of the other shows that I am using. But I'd like this to be for pen pals. I know I've unintentionally terrified a lot of people. I both come from another time period and remember it well, and that is why I behave as though I still live in it a lot of the time. Or maybe I'm in between two worlds, like I've got dual citizenship between the 20th century and the 21st here. But for the pen pals in touch and who are listening to this, if you can please let me know when you listen to a blah de blah, or you listen to an update, a retrospective, whatever, because that just helps me like you would not believe. Just mention it in a letter, or an email, or whatever. So, yeah, I think for some of us, the pen pals I'm closest to, yeah. You know, not just stuff going on in the quote-unquote news, the commercial news, but also just day-to-day life, with how some of this technology is just wiping us out here. Yeah, we're helping each other out here, and thank you. And you're welcome. And, yeah, and for anybody hoping for more of the marriage novel, I'm looking forward to getting back to that, because I was reading the further chapters from after the poem, and I was like, uh-oh, I'm getting, I gotta close it here and get up, walk around a little bit. So, hopefully that'll get more of it created somehow. Just being inspired by it again. Because it's been a while since I really looked at it. You know, especially after the healing chapters are over. That's where they really start to just... you know what I mean. So. But yeah, there was also one pen pal. Finally talked on the phone with her a couple times. That was really nice. And she had been letting me know through letters and also over the phone how honored she was to be of great help to me, just asking questions about Josette, because we're talking about Barnabas the Reluctant Vampire and what the Reluctant Vampire represents, and she was the one who took that a step further and asked about Josette. Now, what does she represent? Oh, that's a good question. But she said she was honored, and I was letting her know it makes a lot of sense, at least I think I let her know this, it makes a lot of sense because she's a little bit older than me and a hardcore Addams Family fan. And from that, and also having seen Dark Shadows, and she's watching it again now, she had the wherewithal, and she really was just like, you know, wanting social media stuff to be over. It is over for us, between her and I. And it's like, oh, I wish it was for a lot of the other people. Because you get hopeful when you make a friend and the friend agrees with you and you feel like, well, you know, now that we understand this, a lot of other people will fall suit. Well, unfortunately not. That stuff is just too strong. But anyway, she helped a great deal because I said, yeah, I mean, you understand Gomez and Morticia and the very obvious attraction. So Barnabas and Josette would not be difficult. And that was what I did find initially with online fans of the Addams Family before a lot of the tragedy started to get worse and worse around online. But I said, yes, yeah, it was really important. And I'm happy that you asked me just because we were getting away from the nonsense so we could actually talk about story and character details and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so I look forward to further work with Josette Dupre and her many incarnations. And another pal, we kind of tried to start as pen pals, and then it became more phone friends, which is fine with me, and she's been getting me through a few years since she made that suggestion, and isn't every single week, but we do have a weekly date and time to shoot for, generally, and that just helps us get through the madness of what's been going on these years, and shoot the breeze and all that, and talk about the shows, talk about other shows, talk about my show a little bit, and she, oh,
yeah, one thing that was really nice talking with her over the phone years ago. I think it was years ago. Oh my gosh, time is just so difficult to keep track of. Now that we're all soap opera, it kind of works the same way as in a soap opera, where it's just the next. And you're like, is it day or night? What week is it? What day of the week? I don't know. You just don't know. But yeah, I remember there was some platform I was using, and she was getting hopeful. Like a lot of people get hopeful. Oh, this tech actually works or whatever. And somebody's going to be talking to you. You know, they're always getting that reassurance over the years of, oh, people will talk. People talk. It's been 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. No, they're not going to speak. You get a little hiccup every once in a while. No. So she had said, you know, she let me know, oh, yeah, you know, like I subscribed to this account and I'm on the phone with her. And she's like, yeah, somebody else was, you know, there was somebody else interested to subscribe to. Well, I don't know that person. It could be a bot for all I know. I know you. I like you. I'll cater to you. So, and that's the thing, is that, unfortunately, what I didn't understand, there's quite a few memos I seem to have gotten that I didn't get in 2014, 2013, or any earlier. Because, yeah, like, all these people just expecting me to instantly know all this stuff that they know because I'm using whatever platform they've been using for years that have been decaying their minds. Yeah, and so I was like, you know, I'm not getting the memo. I'm not getting this. And I'm getting more and more outraged and more upset. And that was, we've discovered through Humane Tech. And I've also been very fanish, I guess I could say, over Tim Wu and his work and just discovering, yeah, the outrage was the point and getting attention was the point. It's been going on before the internet. It's been going on a long time. And the reason that it's been going on a long time is because, unfortunately, it works for making money in a very cheap and twisted way. So, yeah, there's kind of these memos that I've been getting, like, I didn't get the memo on this, I didn't get the memo on that. Everybody is in their own kind of isolated territories and thinking those isolated territories are the entire world for whatever reason. So, yeah. All right, I finally got the memo after, you know, being confused since 2013. Why the heck am I getting all these numbers? And then continuing to get confused over the years. Why am I getting all these numbers and nobody can email except for maybe Melissa? It was like, shit. Or Oshin was good, but we had started already through AO3 and fanfiction.net, et cetera, and so I've been getting those memos. I've been looking into things. Because nobody would, I mean, some people would try to contact me to either calm me down or to say, oh, the problem must be your product, but that's why people aren't talking. It's like, no, it's because there are these really more expensive products out there that are touted as being free, but they actually cost us a lot of grief and basically attention, and that's where people are talking, and they're not talking very nicely to each other, or they're using baby toys, you know, just decay the mind, all this stuff going on. So, yeah, those are the memos I finally got. But, yeah, there were people approaching me every once in a while saying, hey, this, that, and the other thing. Or getting pushy. And it's like, will you go away? That is not the point of this technology. And then eventually I did had to go back to pen pals. And I wanted to anyway, because that's how this project started. I had a pen friend, and I said, how would you feel about a relief series? I mean, we were having fun texting back and forth, writing letters and little emails and stuff. Like, how would you feel if I made a Dark Shadows fan fiction and potentially a new show that solved all the problems and invited more characters, solved all the problems? I would love it. So I got started with that one. She really enjoyed it. So yeah, and then we continued onward. But yeah, I was happy. I've been more than happy to find where the pen pals are. I'm just, the only thing that's very sad about it is that, unfortunately, because social media and all this garbage has just been catching everybody's attention, unfortunately, there have been just gobs of pen pals.
And through the social networks, too,
hundreds of people over the years, they get wind of what I'm doing and they would just listen like crazy, or they'd go to some erroneous someone or other online through one of those dreadful sites and just look for the worst. You know, National Enquirer, Weekly World News, those kind of mags, that's what that shit is. You know, pardon my language, but that's what that stuff is. So unfortunately, I had to deal with that memo because it was so confusing. I mean, imagine, you're trying to get in touch with people who are interested, and then you're either getting treated like crap, or you're not hearing anything, or hundreds of people are ghosting you after they get to know you and they like you and all that stuff. It is terrible, and especially the kids, you know, late teens, early 20s. Oh, I gotta, you know, so far, Autumn was the best, and I miss her so much, but I have no idea what's going on with her, and I hope she's all right. But yeah, every once in a while you find an exception, and oh, Autumn Archer was the exception. I remember I was reading one of her tales, and I was on voice call, and I said, there needs to be a bigger word than prodigy for you. But more or less, yeah, kids and adults, they're getting really just ruined by how this technology has been raising them. And of course, you want to blame the parents. Well, the parents are addicted too. So what can you do? You can't blame everyone. And I got to tell you, any kids listening to this, I feel like, you know, I want to be for you. But yeah, I had a lot of the same, similar problems. Not nearly, it's got to be so much worse. But similar problems with attention grabbers and my elders. You just get these half-assed answers to things and all of this expectation to be perfect, but they're not explaining a diddly to you. You know, every once in a while you'll get something important and you'll think, okay, things are getting better, and then they just go worse again. And it's all just, you know, the more important thing is television, movies, the stereo on occasion, some fancy something or other that is all the rage at the time or whatever, or all the rage for whichever elder or whichever grown up. Yeah. So that's why I was saying that with your Undivided Attention podcast and getting the information, it's like, wow, yeah, that was a lot of what I went through. And our unhappiness certainly wasn't social media. It was more like just fast food. And then the way to deal with that, same crap's going on with social media. People blame themselves. Did the same thing with fast food. I'm sure that's going on too. People blame themselves or they get defensive or whatever when a lot of that food is horrible. It's not nutritious. It's horrible. So there you go. And now it's like fed into our communication systems, a kind of fast food franchise thing. That's why I still love, again and again and again, I still love Barnabas in the movie looking up at that McDonald's sign saying Mephistopheles. I know there's quibbles about who Mephistopheles represents, but I'm still like, hey, I get it and I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It's just gorgeous. I still appreciate that. So yeah, my generation definitely had the attention getters that it's like, oh, this, like, you know what we say about social media. Oh, I can keep in touch with my loved ones. Nobody's keeping in touch barely with anyone. We're all turning into robots and zombies and getting all this information grabbed out of us, which also makes me wonder how on earth are people going to use it to their advantage to sell things if we can't even function? You gotta have a balance. So anyway, yeah, I'm very sorry for a lot of the people younger than me that just got all hopped up on gossip and the Weekly World News version of everybody else and all this gossip tabloid garbage. You know, that used to be for New Music Express and bands having beef wars, even if they weren't really having them. Yeah, now we're getting all stuck in that, so. So I am very sorry. It is not my fault, but I am very sorry. And I'm trying to help. Here I am trying to do that. The other thing, the reason I was doing this, the reason I was sharing it, wasn't to get nitpicked, and certainly not for people to have a parasocial relationship with me. Parasocial relationship was very much on the one-way street, yelling at the TV, and because you wouldn't be able to get in touch with Walter Cronkite. Dude's too big. Or even if you did write him a letter back in the day, dollars to donuts, he probably would never have seen it, just because he might have gotten a lot of those. You just kind of go, why bother? But with the internet, it was supposed to be totally different. And once upon a time, it really was. I mean, everybody was excited in the 90s. I talked to somebody in Australia. I talked to somebody in Tasmania or whatever. Or like, yeah, there was just this global thing. And it's like, well, you could have done that by mail. But I guess this is more exciting somehow because it's quote unquote instant. But then you start to believe all the bogus stuff, too. Like there was that cookie recipe that got around for the apparently Neiman Marcus restaurant or something, which doesn't exist. And, or it didn't at the time. I don't know if one does now, but I mean, I saw people who bought that. And I got another friend that I made in the last few years. She was like, oh, I remember that one. I actually made the cookies. She saw, they were good, but they weren't that good. Because it was a bogus story. It was just this thing to get people to forward more emails and just kind of cause a fluke in the system, in the social system. But then it just got worse and worse with the email. So yeah, every time there's like this magical new invention, all these other horrors come up. And yeah, those are the memos I've been getting from just finding the right information over the years and paying attention to what people are doing and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I did not start The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows and share it to have parasocial relationships with, or, you know, vice versa, have the listeners have parasocial relationships with me. I wanted to have social ones. That was the 1999 to 2005 memo I got about the internet, and that's what it was supposed to be about. And then all of a sudden, all these other commercial companies got in the way, saying that they were the better form of communication when they're some of the crappiest forms of communication I have ever seen in my life. And that's why I go back to square one, correspondence. Yeah, and I just hear it about everybody just miscommunicating. I'm like, you really need to go back to letter writing. Because if you build up from letter writing, correspondence, and the practice of that, then having tools that go a little faster helps the flow. But then if you get these tools that don't go faster, that they're adding all these components to for the sake that they want to keep you glued to it, then yeah, no, you're not saving time. That's just becoming a waste of time. But yeah, I did not start making this show in order for people to have parasocial relationships with me. And that's one of the reasons that I've been pulling stuff down and getting further away from any kind of social network, not advertising them either, and just trying to go back into more of my personal life, sharing the work and the creativity and all those things with the people who remember how to have the social relationships. And some of them being very grateful that I still know, because they're getting lonely too. You know, I know some of you listening getting lonely. In fact, the one person helping me with talking about Josette and what Josette represents and that kind of thing, she let me know, you know, when we were on the phone. I said, yeah, there was the tribute to Terry Jones and John Carlin. She's all, that was good. That was so good. And I was like, thank you. Oh, you heard that. Okay, good. You know, that we're actually talking about this. And she really just commended me on how I put it together. And she was really pleased. She's like, yeah, he said no. And it helps me, you know, personally. I go, yeah, yeah, it really. And it was just so relieving and rewarding to talk to another human being who had listened in and let me know that was good. I really enjoyed it. I was like, okay, thank you. That's what I got into this for, was to have those kind of conversations. Yeah, and that's why when you hear what I love the most, talking about people who've been helping me out, that's why I love doing some of those retrospectives, because I can just talk about, this is what this person said, this is what that person said. Because not only do I love fictional characters, a lot of fictional characters, the people, you know, the people who I jive with. And their differences and that kind of thing. If anybody remembers Bloody Mary's Delight on Fiction Press, Oisin Navoy, she was writing in for Bloody Mary's Delight. She was talking about, like, I'd love a longer story that would, like, reflect before you get into the actual story. And I was thinking about all those old ghost stories where they have those. And so when she said, you know, maybe more of these other details that are more about the people telling the story, more about, you know, whatever is the, it was, I was like, classic Oisin. Wanting more of the stuff that just kind of goes in these other directions. I was like, classic Oisin. You know, I appreciate that because I've gotten to know her so well. And I miss that. I miss interacting with her that way lately. Yeah, so when I can find those individual differences, that's just heaven. It's so enjoyable. Oh gosh, yeah, and even some of the teeth gnashing, because, you know, soap opera teeth gnashing, you know. I was telling Seamus about a lot of this too, where I can't remember if it was Lisa or, yeah, I think it was Lisa in episode 13 getting angry about Dr. Hoffman telling Barnabas what to do, and she was getting in that teeth gnashing watching this soap opera like it was the original. And then Melissa, she got worse and started to, like, kind of name call it, and I was all, there we go, you know. This is what I was looking for, the fun of Dark Shadows and all these old shows, you know, where you're just kind of heckling and that kind of thing. And I think that was one of the problems with the parasocial people, were getting all soap opera and teeth gnashing at what I'm talking about, and I'm just like, oh man, this is not what I got into this for. To become your soap opera that you're pissed at, nope, that was not my point. But yeah, I like to get into where everybody's at and enjoying your company. That's what I was getting into this for. Now, see if we can get into a little studying here, because I'm trying to figure out how the pit will continue to thrive. Got the lovely books by Catherine Lee Scott, but I was making these things on the weblog, going through episodes of Dark Shadow 640 to 700, and they just give you these little brief things. I almost wish that we had bullet lists per episode, just like pinpointing certain things for each one. And I'm trying to figure out how I worked through 20, 21, and 22, like how many episodes of Dark Shadows I got through. Because it felt a little bit like I might be able to get a lot of the stuff from maybe 6 episodes into 1 episode of The Pit. But that is not something that would become reliable. And definitely looking forward to Madame Finlay. So what do we got? 643. Amy tells David that Quentin is angry. Spirits visit them as they enter the West Wing. So yeah, that's about where I'm at now. So yeah, they're already asking. Oh gosh, yeah. Oh, that was good too. I was thinking over how Carolyn had performed Magda, Nancy Barrett, but for the seance, and Carolyn was getting possessed by Magda Ricosi, the spirit of Magda Ricosi. And I thought, well, if I've got kind of a spark regression, and it's Hoffman, you don't have to get all crazy the way Nancy Barrett did. You can do it subdued. So I found a really good Magda episode where she's talking a lot, and I was just like, okay, I think we can just have her be more subdued. I was trying to get that voice down. My curse. My curse. And I was like, yes! So she doesn't get too loud with it, but she's definitely getting overwhelmed. I probably got pretty loud with it, but it was really nice to finally pay attention to Magda Ricosi and Oh, it was such a good character for, you know, all the embarrassment that we sometimes feel about the Ricosis. Oh, there was something about them. Something about Magda was just wonderful. And so, yeah, looking forward to that. And at some point, Janet Finlay, Madame Finlay, too. Which I kind of wonder if I'm going with the idea of 13 episodes a season per radio drama, just to keep it a spooky number. If the second season finale might be Madame Finlay being saved or something. I'm not sure how it's going to go here. It might be the Steven showing up from Bewitched. That might be where it is. We'll see. We'll find out, I guess. I don't think it's going to be nearly as exciting as episode 13. My goodness. So, oh golly. Yeah, and then the many layers of Quentin. I'm going to spoil that because I really adored how Melissa helped me with that. It was a phone call, and I said, hey, I didn't have time to ask my aunt about this the other night. Could you help me with that? And she just knew the show so well. All these things from 1897 and how packed it was. Every once in a while, she would start to deviate from the layers of Quentin, which was what I specifically was asking about. And I would kind of pull her back. I was like, let's go back, layers of Quentin, because I want to make a list of who he was and all the different facets of, you know, how that changed. And that was wonderful. So I'm going to go through that. Going through my notes of the conversation with Melissa. So, starts with that. Turn of the screw. Amy and David. Evil ghost Quentin. These are the phases of Quentin's character here. Just very basic. So, evil ghost. And then we get to 1897 through the time travel. And, of course, he's alive. And he's the playboy. He comes back from some trip or whatever. Wants to know the secret. Da-da-da-da-da. And then Quentin, because of various things are going on, he gets killed. So, and then something comes up where it's like, well, he wasn't supposed to die this way. So, magic, he's a zombie. And then, for whatever reason, magic, he's alive. And no longer a zombie. Like, for some reason, it just magic, no, you know, whatever character is involved there. I don't want to give it all away. I just want to give you a basic setup. Melissa was telling me all about it. So, magic, this is a zombie. Magic, not a zombie, therefore alive. And then the werewolf curse. So, then the werewolf curse, like, throws him for a loop for... Oh, man, I remember my husband and I watching that, and I'm just like... It's like he's always in these torn clothes, I kept saying. It's like the Kurt Shatner thing. Like the obligatory
her ripped shirt. Or I guess you could say Incredible Hulk, too.
Just look all the clothes poor guy has to go through. And then from the werewolf curse, somehow it's transferred to a portrait of Quentin. And then the portrait has the curse, and Quentin doesn't. And like a Dorian Gray thing, he's immortal too. And that keeps David Selby in the series much longer. And then I asked Melissa at some point after we were talking about all these other things, I'm like, so how does it go where Quentin starts as a ghost? You know, we're getting him as this evil ghost haunting Collinwood. And then he's eventually immortal and alive. And the ghost thing, you know, does it ever get explained? And she says, the writers, you know, Hall, Russell, and the elusive Violet Wells just made it work. And also, and everybody's getting hot for David Selby or interested in David Selby. They'd keep him on the show. Okay, great. We got him back. Or continuing. And so I'm like, okay. Well, you know, that's all I got to know. I just got to figure that out. And then it was funny just because I was like, glad that we were able to go through that and handle it and be able to get a step-by-step, just kind of a bullet point for the different phases of Quentin Collins in the Dark Shadow series. And she was talking about, like, 1897. This is Melissa talking. 1897 is awesome because there are so many moving parts to it. So many plots and subplots. It's the most complex storyline in the whole series. And I was saying, yeah. And that was the thing, is that when I had to get Kitty down and we got the box set, I am just zooming in just for Kitty. And that's why people would get confused. Like, they wouldn't remember Kitty because there was just so much going on in 1897 anyway, if you could remember it. But for myself, trying to get my episode 12 as accurate as possible, I'm going through Kitty episode, just zooming in right for her and skipping everybody else. She was just busting up. So I was like, yeah, you know, it's like I'm just kind of like zooming through. There's maybe characters that I'm familiar with, characters that I'm not so familiar with. And I'm, you know, and as I'm zooming through, I'm just kind of like, who are you? Oscar Wilde? It doesn't matter. I'll get to you later. And that was good. Yeah, it was definitely good to set that up to figure out. And then I asked her about what happened to Beth, because it seemed like she was there and then she wasn't there, and then she tells me about what happened to Beth, and I was like, well, I remember sometime it seemed like she either got fired or she quit, like resigned or something, and after packing her bags and doing all this stuff, suddenly she was just back to being a maid all of a sudden. It was, and I'm like, if she could, you know, resign or get fired and then rehired that quickly, we could move her to where, you know, find a way that she will move away and not have such a tragic outcome as most soap opera characters tend to do. And another thing I was hitting on, I was kind of studying the Julia Barnabas phenomenon again, because I do see, you know, it just seems like it's kind of endless. And I was noticing, like, when it was kind of creeping into kind of dominate a lot of the Dark Shadows fan fiction. And what Lisa told me was really important, and I feel so grateful that it's like, I'm sorry you had to endure so much of the stuff that you didn't enjoy. I mean, she said, yeah, the writing was good, it's just the pairings didn't make sense from what I had watched over and over and over and over again. So me and Lisa have had our talks where it was like, what is the point of this? Like, what is the point of it just so many and continuing? And there's a lot of facets to what I call the Julia Barnabas phenomenon. And I think that's also because the whole thing has so many facets, that's why it was so easy to name it a phenomenon. Because with other non-canon pairings, you get some people kind of snickering, or even people who are interested, oh, this, I'm just doing this farcically. And people become invested too, but it's usually just for fun. It's not something that seems to just take over so much, or any desire to take over. So my, and I've discussed this in a log entry, my main beef with it is the unhappiness going on, whether it's for or against. It's just so much unhappiness, because when, you know, I was making friends with Helena for the first time, it was fine. And there are other Julia Barnabas fans that I'd made friends with, and they're just like, yeah, it's just this thing that I like. And, well, you know, we're feeling sorry for Julia, wouldn't it be nice if? And so, yeah, it was reasonable. Whereas with some of the stuff that I've seen and that I've heard about, I just go, yeah. And so I was kind of thinking it over, and I had another consideration for why it happens, why there's so much of it, and why it continues to get written about.
It feels a little, there's multiple reasons, I'm sure. There's some people who really are invested and they really do enjoy it, and bless your hearts. Because it's just, it's your thing and you go with it and you don't go like, I'm right. You know, it's more like, it's my thing. And me and Helena have had those discussions too. It's like, that's what I like. But I also like this other stuff too. So there's that. But another big reason that I'm seeing is that it's kind of a short-lived high. That the old stories just didn't seem to cut it, so there needs to be a new story to again bring sort of a short-lived high of finally. And then after that short-lived high of finally wears off, you got to get another one. And then it just keeps on going. You have to get another one and another one. And if anybody's ever gotten disenchanted, you know, gotten into the idea and then start to feel overwhelmed with, wow, there's a lot of these, I'd love to hear from you. Seriously. Because it's got to be a fascinating experience to think, oh gosh, there's all this wealth here. I can totally enjoy this idea. And then start to realize it's not cutting it for you anymore for a reason. And I could definitely understand what the reason would be. Otherwise, gosh, I'm trying to think if there's ever been a non-canon pairing that I've been really, really interested in, other than the Little Women, Laurie and Joe March. But I got over that, you know, like I got over that years ago. And I didn't even get into fan fiction. That was not even an option when I was watching in versions of Little Women and reading books or listening to audiobooks of Little Women. It wasn't, that thought didn't even enter my head. There was nothing, I certainly wasn't outraged at Joe March for her decision. I was just puzzled, you know, wasn't offended. And that's just, to me, bizarre. I've definitely seen, in real life, relationships that confuse me, that do work, quote-unquote, even though they seem very dysfunctional. But I can't remember in my life ever being angry at an actual person for rejecting another person. Because usually you're just trying to be friends on both sides, where you're just trying to work it out with them, especially when you're young. So yeah, and you know, I talked about this in the Julia Barnabas Inquiry podcast from years ago, where I go, yeah, rejection, it hurts. But that's the thing, you know, when it comes to this saying, oh, well, you know, we're into Dr. Hoffman for being a strong woman, kind of a women's liberation thing. And it's like, well, yeah, but then there's this other facet of pity and feeling sorry for her and being mad at the person you want to be with. And I just go, whoa, pump your brakes. And it's like, there's something not quite right. But then that was really good that my auntie had expressed for the author's notes in chapter 8 of Margaret Chauzette to Pray that the women's movement back in the day, you know, it in retrospect looks like a very bumpy road that where the critical left turn at Albuquerque could have been easy to miss. And in my mind, that critical left turn at Albuquerque is the dude who doesn't dig you is the guy you dump. And that's a hard lesson to learn. I remember quite a few times very confusing situations. But through a lot of difficult life experience, I began to understand the same thing with, like, friends. It's like you want to be liked, and you admire someone, and they're just saying no or giving you the no impression. And then you have to just kind of move on and try to find the people who are very healthy for you and that you're gonna gel with very well. Which, of course, you know, that's why when I got also the healthy rejections from pen pals for The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, where it was not, and yeah, it hurt, but they were so healthy. And quite a few of the pen pals that honestly gave me the rejections, I still write to them, you know. So it was the weird, you know, it wasn't even like the sudden ghosting while still getting statistics and downloads from the pen pals area. That is just, imagine that happening to you. Imagine, like, you know, you're looking for companionship, you have something that you really enjoy and you want to share it for the discussion with other people, and then they're just, you know, just taking and taking and taking, and you're being told that there's something wrong with you. And it's like, you know, or you're being told nothing, but you're still getting evidence that the person you shared it with, that you wanted companionship with, is still listening. Think about how that would make you feel, really. And that's, you know, where the pen pals who have worked out, they're just like, yeah, I wouldn't want to be without your companionship for this. It's a great show, and you've been extremely kind to me, and you've been, it's like you're so generous, and but also they let me know that I can see how this would happen to you because of my own experience with the new technology. So it's not right, and I'm with you. So thank you very much for saying, letting me know. Yeah, it definitely helps, because it's dramatic to have to go through this, and, you know, being just all those glorious 1999 internet promises. Yeah, and that's another reason that listening to Tim Wu's interviews have really calmed me down, because his question was, has this happened before? Because he was kind of, when the internet was getting bigger and bigger, late 90s, early aughts, or I guess, you know, working for a company and questioning, okay, so this is new technology, and we have these world peace ideas, we have these grand expectations and anticipations, but there have been other tech industries in the past. What happened with those? And then, of course, he goes backwards, talks about what radio did and this other kind of tabloid news idea. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, and it's historical and there's also economics involved. And I'm just stunned. And actually, my husband's getting interested in his books, you know, because I said, sit down, listen to this interview. You don't have to listen to the whole thing. And he's like, yeah, this sounds like a good author. And so, yeah, I'm not sure if he's done with one of his books, but I'm definitely interested in anything else he has to tell me about that. And it starts to, like I was saying in another show, I think it was April, where when you get the information, as opposed to the panic news or the confusion, like with Wadsworth and Barnabas, Wadsworth gives Barnabas this information, and instead of getting his ire up, instead of getting defensive, he goes, oh, you know. And so with a lot of stuff from Humane Tech, Your Undivided Attention, and right now some of Tim Wu's work, which they had interviewed him, and that's how I found out about Tim Wu. Yeah, you get the information, the solid information, the historical stuff, and you just chill out. It's great. Oh, yeah. So that is good. And that's also when I looked over. That was why it was so frustrating when I was getting all this weird rhetoric, anti-Maggie Barnabas and pro-Julia Barnabas as a romance, and I'm just like, I don't even know what's going on. And it took a long time to get the information. So as I've gone through, and I just go, well, what's the likelihood that this would get just so darn big to the point where somebody like Jim Romanovich would be asking Kathleen Scott if it was the great romance, and she's just confusedly saying no. You know, especially after writing all those books and trying to get everybody else involved in the publications, even Return to Collinwood, which I got right after we saw the film for the second time at a Barnes & Noble. And just trying to figure out, like, well, why did this happen? And what happened to the peaceful coexistence of it? And, of course, I could easily... commercial social media is to blame for a lot of stuff, and you know, all these things that, you know, you pay for these smartphones or whatever, and then they just start ruling you. And it is just, yeah, science fiction nightmare. Oh my gosh, yeah. So when you start to look at things that way, then it starts to become way more relaxing and less hyped up and, you know, getting all this stuff. Like, I was on the phone with a friend from my church, and she was giving me all this information that she understood about the virus going on now. And it really was nice to get just a gentle explanation of the information about it and how it works and all those things. And and that's what I try to shoot for. Because hype sells. That's the thing about hype. It sells. And that's why it gets used in a lot of commercial productions, including things that are news or claim to be news. So that is another unfortunate factor of life. But I think that is all for a blah-de-blah. I wanted to potentially go into where we are at as far as the next steps in the pit. For some of you, you know, that you've got 20 and 21, you know I'm working on 22. And that's another reason that I make these, is that pen pals who are in kind of the grassroots team, I let you know what's coming up. And that might confuse people who aren't in grassroots. You know, as I always say, get in touch if you're interested.
But yeah, we're getting quieter, we're getting smaller, we're shooting for that here with the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows and who I like to think of as my pit crew of not racing cars, at least not since episode 13, exactly. But yeah, it's just for you all that have stuck by me that I really appreciate, especially, you know, I've lost friends through what this commercial technology has done, and I know you have too, and I've suggested maybe mourning some people together that we miss, but it's so hard. I mean, how do you mourn people who are still alive? You know, that they didn't, there wasn't a blow up. Exactly. There wasn't like a blow up like we would have known in the 20th century. They were either online blow ups or ghosting. And it's like, you know, what can you do? And because sometimes you don't know. I actually had a pen friend get back in touch with me, and she specifically said, please don't do that. Please let me know. And I said, that's very admirable that you would just straight up ask. And I also had another pen friend who let me know, hey, I can't write anymore. She was the one that, you know, I said, we did it together. You know, we pulled ourselves out, and that was good. And I understand. I said, it hurt, but I understand. And, you know, that kind of, I guess, takes a bigger woman. I don't know. To be able to say it or ask it or whatever. And cause it used to hurt a lot more than it does now. The rejection or the question, that kind of thing. I just wish you could do more for the younger generation or even the people who have regressed to a younger mindset, like, or less mature mindset, less confident mindset. You wish you could do more. And but yeah, if you can't communicate and their correspondence skills are bad and their honesty skills are way off, you know, what can you do? They're just going to go back to the commercial stuff that keeps them hooked and helps them to believe that they're having real dialogue with reliable people when that kind of a filter makes them very unreliable, myself included. Yeah, and you know, you can't do anything. That's also why every once in a while I go to Fartbook, I go to drop off stuff, kind of as a life preserve. Somebody interested, maybe you want out of this nonsense, maybe you're interested in what I'm doing, if you could still email, you know, talking to me on that stuff, just don't. Just don't. And thank you to my pen pal phone friend who did that too. You know, she sees me on there, she emails me a little something. She doesn't bother, you know, to write anything because she knows that I'm not in a good frame of mind when I'm using that stuff. And that's why I try to use it as little as possible. It has traumatized me. I don't know when I'm going to get through that and heal all the way, or if I will ever heal all the way. But yeah, she knows, and other people don't, and I get... But at the same time, there's so much vegetation happening that I'm not even sure they remember if I get wacky. So, you know, it's just correspondence and the old tech. I mean, that telephone's been here in pretty easy ability for over a century now to a lot of people. It still works, you know. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But yeah, this extra stuff. Yeah, I remember when email still can be pretty warped with time wasters. You know, people send you all this stuff. But yeah. Well, if we're in touch, stay in touch. And if you're interested, get in touch when you can, if you can. XOISCYTHE at hotmail.com. That is my email for this work. XOISCYTHE at hotmail.com. And I look forward to hearing from you. All right, everybody. You take care.